42. It was odd for Maracy to feel such urgency while sitting and waiting. The elevated train of Bilming lived up to its reputation. The group of them sat in a private compartment, speeding around the city, bypassing traffic congestion. The train stopped frequently, but each time it did, it bolted back into motion with a jarring acceleration. It felt almost like she was a coin shot, each burst of speed from the train a fresh push, launching them ever closer to their destination. She'd read of the Ascendant Warrior's flight of destiny in the Words of Founding when she'd returned to Luthadel at the last minute to save Harmony. In the stories, Vin had traveled a miraculous distance in mere hours. Now, Maracy likely traveled at that same speed, in cushioned comfort with a cool breeze piped in from outside. They carried weapons hidden in cases or sacks, and Maracy still wore the simple trousers and shirt she'd donned for her sting. Moonlight was dressed as a Bilming constable, and Twin Soul had shrouded himself in a local fisherman's rain cloak. She'd initially worried that his suit and colorful sash would stand out, but he clearly knew how to be inconspicuous.
"For this to work," Maracy said to them, "I need to understand our resources. That means, Moonlight, I really need to know what you're capable of." "Art criticism," she said, "fighting if needed, wisecracks when appropriate." "I meant any extraordinary abilities," Maracy said.
"Her wisecracks are extraordinary," Twin Soul said, his eyes twinkling. "Why, they're so remarkable that I quite often can't see which part of them is supposed to be wise."
Moonlight, in turn, rolled her eyes.
"I have 3 soul stamps on me at the moment, 2 universal stamps, 1 essence mark. It takes time and preparation to create more, time we don't have, so we'll have to rely on these ones. I can use each stamp multiple times, but no use will last long since they weren't..." "Right. You have no idea what I'm talking about."
"Moonlight," Twin Soul explained, "has stamps that rewrite the nature of the objects she encounters. One makes a doorway appear where none previously existed. The second repairs a broken or worn object to make it look new. Is that correct?"
Moonlight nodded. "It's something I'm practicing still. Stamps that will work on any object, I mean. Requires invested ink on this planet, but we've got the process mostly working."
"So you can make a door appear," Maracy said, "and you can make an object that was broken become new? How many times?"
"As often as I want," Moonlight said, "but only for a limited period in each case."
"Wow," Maracy whispered. "That's magic?"
"Is allomancy magic?" Moonlight asked.
"Of course not," Maracy said.
"Neither is this," Moonlight said. "To repair something, I merely rewrite the past, making the object think it was well-maintained or never broke. Like I said, universal stamps are a new technology. I don't have them working perfectly yet, but they'll do for now."
It felt magical to Maracy regardless. Allomancy was one thing. It made perfect sense to be able to use metal to push on other pieces of metal. But rewriting the past of an object? How was that not magical?
"You said you have 3 stamps," Maracy said. "What's the third?"
"It's for emergencies," Moonlight shifted in her seat. "The other 2 work on non-living objects only. This one changes a person, me specifically, in dramatic ways. I avoid using it if possible."
Maracy glanced at Twin Soul, who shook his head in a leave-it-alone sort of way.
"Well, all right." She hated going into a potential fight without knowing what her options and advantages were, but at least she'd learned something. The train slowed at a stop, causing them all to lean in their seats at the change in momentum. People piled into the corridor between compartments outside, waiting to flood out into the station.
"And you, Twin Soul?" Maracy asked. "Is there a limit to the things you can make?"
"Alas,"
he said, nudging his backpack, which was on the floor.
"There are indeed serious limits. I can only maintain rosite objects under certain fields of investiture. Some planets have those naturally, but yours does not. So my rosite creations, outside of our safe house, must be touching me, or they will disintegrate. It also requires water drawn from my body to fuel the creations. Beyond that, my ability to form objects is limited by my personal skill and understanding. I cannot make you a gun, for example. The mechanics are beyond this old mind, and the intricacies too fine. Simple tools are the extent of my abilities, though Scylla Janna has bonded some more talented than I in that regard.
Scylla Janna, Maracy said, trying to form the unfamiliar sounds. That is your god?
Both less and more than a god, he explained. Scylla Janna is one of the primal aethers. They predate Edonalsium, you know, and exist outside of his power.
They predate the Shattering, Moonlight said. That doesn't mean they predate Edonalsium.
To my people, this is a sacred tenet,
he said to Maracy, ignoring Moonlight.
The primal aethers grant some people a bud of their core.
He raised his right hand, revealing a transparent web of stone embedded in his palm, and let light from the window shine through as he held it up before the glass. She could see the bones inside, and it seemed the crystal had somehow entirely replaced his flesh and muscles in that spot.
This bud connects me to Scylla Janna, he continued, and through him to all of his other aether bound. He is the core, and we his web. He is eternal, and we his mortal agents in the Cosmere.
That was a lot to take in, but Maracy supposed that all that mattered was that he was willing to help. Thank you for joining our fight, she said. I'm glad that Scylla Janna could spare you.
There is little else for us now,
he said, looking out the window.
Until we can return home.
I'm willing to go with you, Pras, Moonlight said, if you want to try.
The forces in my homeland are too strong, too deadly, he said. Scylla Janna says we must remain in exile. He will decide when and if we are to return. He would not risk another extermination.
The train bolted forward again, causing them all to lean the other direction in their seats. Only three more stops until they arrived. Moonlight, can your door stamp help us get into the enemy base? Maracy asked. It will depend on the building materials, she said. This stamp pretends the people who constructed the place installed a door. It'll be touch and go for it to work on things like natural rock. Then we can sneak into the factory from any direction, Maracy said, and then find the way down into the caverns. They've been moving a lot of supplies, Moonlight said. Large crates of equipment and food. So I doubt we're looking for some hidden stairwell. You're right, Maracy agreed. There will likely be a freight elevator in the main loading bay. Good assumption.
We could attempt, Twin Soul said, to pretend to be members of their organization, making a delivery. Perhaps we could hijack a supply truck on the way.
Tried that, Maracy said. It was kind of a mess. I'd rather be more stealthy. I agree, Moonlight said. I suggest we scout the location, find an empty room at the rear and create a door. They'll have their security focused on entry points which we can avoid. From there, we make our way to the cargo docks and locate the elevator. A reasonable enough plan, though Maracy's anxiety increased the closer they came to their destination. Soon the train lurched to a stop, and the three of them piled off. She worried the long case she was carrying, with her borrowed rifle hidden inside, would draw attention, but no one gave her so much as a second glance. Perhaps they thought it was some kind of musical instrument. More likely, they didn't care. Neither of Maracy's companions were of a Scadrian ethnicity, but Moonlight kept a hat on to shade her eyes. She was shorter than most from Maracy's world, but there was no telling if that was a trait of her people or an individual body shape. Twin Soul, in contrast, was tall and lanky. His darker skin tone stood out on the street, but most would just assume he had terrace blood. That people's colorations varied far more than those of people with old central dominance heritage, like Maracy. Plus, there was a lot of variety in dress in this city. People seemed to eschew the dark browns and blacks that were more common in Ellendale. Vibrant colors, often clashing, were part of the style here, with other oddities too.
In the train station alone, they passed a costumed mascot trying to hand out flyers for a furniture store, a couple of masked, malwish tourists, and a Kolos-blooded woman in a suit. Outside the station, atop the platform with steps leading to the streets below, they spotted their target in the near distance, an old brown brick factory with a mottled sign out front. Even this futuristic city had less desirable sections of town. Many were hidden away beneath the tracks. Maracy had hoped to find the building quiet, since the Ghostblood spy's records had indicated infrequent supply drops in recent weeks. Today, unfortunately, the building was buzzing with activity, some half a dozen trucks loading up and pulling out through a large bay door at the side of the structure.
"Well," Moonlight said, "little doubt where the loading bay is. We'll probably find the elevator in there."
"Inside the bay," Twin Soul said, "that is currently full of enemy forces?"
"Yeah. What if," Maracy said, "we came into the elevator from the back? You can make a door in any wall, right? What if we made one into the elevator from behind?" "That's possible," Moonlight said, "though I'm not comfortable with how busy it looks. We were hoping to slip in during a quiet moment."
Maracy agreed, though as she considered it, she realized that had been naive of them. The set knew that they were in Bilming and actively trying to stop them. Maracy hesitated as she watched several of the trucks roar away from the factory, heading toward the hill with the government offices. Then she found herself smiling.
"They're worried about Wax," she said. "They're marshaling troops, gathering resources. I'll bet they're sending it all to deal with him."
"Maybe," Moonlight said.
"Trust me," Maracy said. "Where Wax goes, fireworks follow. The set is worried about him, and they likely know exactly where he is. Flying through the air does tend to make him conspicuous."
"If you're correct, my lady," Twin Soul said, "then they might not be expecting our incursion here. Their eyes may be diverted toward Donshot."
More trucks pulled away, and Twin Soul pointed toward the northern side of the city, where a giant plume of dark smoke was rising.
"That's the mayor's mansion. Perhaps Donshot is being extra difficult?"
"I'll take it," Maracy said, leading the way down the steps. "Let's strike while everyone is distracted."